is Malcolm Tomlinson, actor, horse racing commentator and voiceover artiste, proudly presenting the Midweek Drive's regular 6:30 p.m. correspondent. Whether he's in his PJs or not, the truth is out there, director extraordinaire, Mr. Phil Leonis!
See, that's what you needed to do at the Oscars, with your Bill Shatner and your Seth people, etc. You want to big it up from that point of view. Well, okay, it's 18:38 here, so that's technically 6:38 in 2 seconds. But he's here. Are you, Phil? Are you there? Are you here? Are you over there? What's happening?
I thought you meant it was the year 1838 there in Lincolnshire.
That's true.
Well. I am here. I am here, and I really can't waste any time. I think I need to get started by concluding Annette Andre's letter from upstate New York. So here I go. No, like everybody was serious. Listen, you all thought I was seriously going to listen with the conclusion of her letter.
Well, it'll happen. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be funny if I did? Like I emailed her and said, send me the end of it. That would be so great.
It'll happen. I mean, I don't like cutting people off in their prime, so to speak. I had an attempt, but then in the end I thought it's going to be a full channel drop completely, because otherwise she paid no attention whatsoever. Would have continued. Anyway, carry on.
I did hear when you opened the studio mic. That was pretty funny. That, it was the studio mic opened, so you hear a little background. Then you hear Alex move closer to the mic. Then you hear his voice. And then you hear what can only be described as Alex's voice being ignored completely. but, you know, it did bring up a whole range of issues, that as it always does. But what was fascinating to me was I've been reading the Steve Jobs biography by Walter Isaacson, and the role, the significant role that LSD played in Steve Jobs' development as a visionary is not to be underestimated, and certainly wasn't underestimated by Steve Jobs himself. And I indeed have had an experience with a ghost. What the heck?
It was my attempt to sort of have a little bit of Oscar moments brought into the whole thing there with, you know, the theme from Jaws. I should have used that.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah?
That's funny. Yeah, by all means, play me off. Like, I'm the one you need to play off. Look. When we were making Spectres, a film that is in your proud possession, if I'm not mistaken,
well, actually,
Alex.
Currently it's with Andrew David, managing editor of Siren. He's had it for several weeks now.
Andy David. You can never trust a man with two first names to return any DVDs you loan him. During the making of it, during pre-production, a hand reached out between... to, you know, the staircase you're describing with the space between stairs, hand reached out and pulled my right ankle out from under me, and I went down, and of course there was no one else there. There was no one else in the basement. So that was my experience with that. But we'll move on, won't we?
We will, because that's what we do here. Keep on moving on.
I could almost not believe that it was Cameron's selection. I really thought when I was listening to it that Katie must have made that particular musical selection. So I was glad to hear that that all the Linkin Park references were I don't know, authenticated by Cameron. So that was lovely. Where do you want me to go, Alex? Do you want me to talk about hen houses? Because you know the sad epidemic of homeless chickens around the world really is.
It's gutting. I know, this is something which, you know, in all seriousness, and we love Penny Roberts. She's a wonderful soul, etc. But fundamentally, it's a tough call in terms of the ethics of hen houses and whether indeed that might have won hearts and minds in both Iraq and Afghanistan if only the combined forces had actually sent in the hen houses and send in the chickens as opposed to just leaving them to sort of sort out there. Anyway, it's your part of the show. I mean, that's,
Katie, I'm going to include the news. Since Ed Wellman is, you know, really, if he's not the heart and soul, he's at least the liver and pancreas of the Midweek Drive. And since he did the news today, I was paying particularly close attention. So congratulations on Lincolnshire having the lowest rate of teen pregnancy since 1969. And really, congratulations to all the young women in the studio for making that possible.
There we are.
But I thought the whole reference to running news and Ed running and all that was too soon, and I know it was directed at me because, of course, I have to now go into training for a 10K marathon run.
Exactly.
Following the special Oscar edition of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. And, of course, if you know anything about Phil Ernest, you know he doesn't run ever. Under any circumstances, and now he's got a 10K for charity. And I won the bet. That's the crazy thing about it. For people who don't know what I'm talking about, of course, every year Dean Haglund and I place a high-stakes wager on who will predict more of the Oscar winners in all 24 categories. It wasn't even close this year. I mean, I just cleaned the floor with Dean. He kind of shamed me because the wager on his end was that if I lost, I would have to run a 10K for charity. My wager was if he lost, he'd have to spend 10 hours watching David Lynch films, not for charity. It helps no one at all except my own sick, sadistic sense. So because he hates David Lynch films. So I felt so shamed by that I decided, as you know, on the show, I'm going to go ahead and fulfill the wager, even though I did win.
I think that's nobility, noblesse oblige in many ways. But I have to also cite, for me, the quote of the entire Academy Awards ceremony was from a certain Lily Holloman. Somehow I managed to watch the full-blown Oscars twice this year. I feel a strange mixture of contentment and shame inside. I think that sums up.
Yeah,
I'd go with that. Well done, Lily. Yes, well sorted through on that. We'll put you up for a few more acting posts, which you may or may not actually receive, but there we are. It's par for the course.
Well, eight hours of watching, you know, because it was almost 4 hours, the show, and watching a full 8 hours of people congratulating themselves can make you really need a long hot shower afterwards.
But that's just fine. Nicola, were you following the Oscars? Do you sort of follow the excitement of dress malfunctions and wardrobe challenges and Jennifer Lawrence falling up the stairs and a wonderful...
No, I have actually missed it, but I would like to see probably the best bits because that would be quite long. Eight hours.
Grace?
I actually really wanted to watch it, but I had to get up really early the next morning. But as soon as I got up, I Googled Christoph Waltz because I wanted to see if he'd won. And his speech was beautiful, so I was very happy.
Nice. Katie?
It was nice when Christoph Waltz, because often it is such a political race. The Oscars are every bit as political as a running for office or something. So it isn't often the most deserving that wins. And really, in the case of Christoph Waltz, it is. I mean, comparing acting is so subjective. It's really, how can that be a competitive, event? But the job that Christoph Waltz had in that film, unlike all the other supporting actors who were nominated, he actually, alone among them, had to carry the film that he was in for the first 30 or 45 minutes, because although he's not the main character, the main character in Django Unchained is introduced as a slave and remains pretty much silent for 30 minutes. We don't even get to know his character until at least a half hour in. So it's completely resting on Christoph Waltz's shoulder to carry that movie. And if he does not pull that off, we're not interested, we're not invested, and there's no recovery. And he does such a brilliant job with it. So I was really actually pleased to see that in this case, the person with the challenge most critical to the success of the individual picture really did get rewarded for it.
Katie?
No, I didn't see it.
Marvellous. Ed?
No, I saw the after-show party, which was live on our Daybreak breakfast time television here. Yeah. And I recognised Michael Douglas,
Catherine Zeta-Jones. Yep. Who was, of course, very good in Rockstar with Tom Cruise. I thought surprisingly good, actually. It's kind of like Chicago Revisited for a Darling Bud of May.
It worked very well on our breakfast television, I have to say.
There we are, you see. Worked very well on Ed's breakfast television.
It did. I mean, I was maybe not the only one watching it, but from my perspective, it was good.
It's great.
I'm sure that that means something to you, that it doesn't mean to me, but I would say that Ed's Breakfast Television would be a great name for a show.
I think we've got
When Ed, like Piers Morgan before him, flees the UK because of illegal wiretapping, I think that Ed could have a show here on a network called Ed's Breakfast Television.
Well, of course, the movie Ed TV was the follow-up to Natural Born Killers, if memory serves, in terms of various other factors. But yes, that's right. And it's nice to know also that Ethan Dettmeyer is looking to feature the Midweek Drive on one of his Showcase Showtime cinematic things, which is marvellous stuff there. Getting to work on that.
He made it last week, didn't he? Onto the show?
He did. He was there. He was in full force. Despite the floods and despite all the other challenges he'd been faced with, you should help out your neighbours in Los Angeles. That's what I say. Because otherwise you'd be like Lincoln. You don't know who your neighbour is.
50% of us don't.
50%. 50%. Do you know who your neighbour is
in
LA?
But not knowing who your neighbour is helps keep that teen pregnancy rate down, though.
Nice. Okay, so where to after this,
too
though?
Soon? Was that too soon?
Okay. In the biblical sense.
Who does not love the appearances of Arthur Weingarten? And I loved hearing about, you know, all his personal experiences with Bruce Lee. Of course, a friend of mine, John Saxon, a wonderful actor who was a matinee idol back in the 50s has earned new generations of fans almost every decade. He was the co-star with Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon and also one of the pallbearers for Bruce Lee. And so, of course, I always would hit him up with questions about Bruce Lee. But Dean and I were making The Truth Is Out There when we were shooting it. We went to a place called the Seattle Museum of the Mysteries. And ostensibly in the finished film of The Truth Is Out There, all you see from that visit is some material about the first ever reported UFO encounter with an Air Force plane in the United States, and then a little bit of Dean playing a theremin and also playing with a voice box that allows you to communicate with spirits on the other side, whatever that means. So, but the part that does not get included is that a whole section of the Seattle Museum of the Mysteries is dedicated to Bruce Lee and all the odd mysteries and conspiracies that surround him. There's a whole hall dedicated to that. Maybe someday, just for you, Alex, and for the Midweek Drive listeners, I'll cut together some of that footage and let you make it available. On the other hand, I might not. Who knows?
It's that uncertainty that makes life interesting. That's the important thing.
And the other connection with The Truth Is Out There, because everything comes back to my epic of comedy, consciousness, and conspiracy, is Charlie Chaplin. I mean, all this information that Arthur was relaying about Chaplin, you know, it's the reason that Dean Haglund lives where he does, in downtown Los Angeles, right across the street from the historic United Artists building. And in the film The Truth Is Out There, he talks a bit about Charlie Chaplin and his compatriots, Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford and D.W. Griffith, forming their own studio so that they could go independent, so they could fight the man in their own way, making their own films their own way and then releasing them their own way, which is, of course, what Dean Haglund himself is doing.
And doing it very well.
Much was near and dear to my heart in what Arthur was talking about.
And any news about the flowers in Harrogate?
Excuse me? I didn't understand a word. What?
The flowers in Harrogate, the replacement for Cameron Tilbury in the early part of the programme, which had Nicola talking about her unfeasibly large onions. Well, not necessarily hers, but, you know, they were mighty. They were the size of two babies in many
ways.
It was,
yes.
Exactly. Don't have the baby.
Nicola's unfeasibly large onions is definitely a section each and every week on Ed's Breakfast Television.
Gosh, yeah.
I think I'd agree with you on that.
You know what?
There's photos of it.
I wasn't going to bring this up, but I didn't hear the first few minutes. And I felt so bad. I felt so bad because I thought I'd missed Cameron again. Because if I... I miss Cameron almost more often than I think I get to hear Cameron, because I'm always just running a few minutes late, and it doesn't matter how early I get up.
It, like is, morning, it is, eight, what is it, 8 a.m.? 8 a.m. In L.A. time? It will be, yes.
It's 9 a.m.
9 a.m., yeah, 9 a.m. Right, yeah.
But, you know, I get up around 7, and then I get involved in tasks, and then I don't wrap them up quite in time. That's a, and they were computer-related today, so, I'm getting very
it's all right. I know that technically we are stepping aside from having a pope for a few weeks' time. I don't think there's any truth in the rumour that Phil Leonis will be our next pope. Possibilities, I suppose. But, you know, we can give you absolution. We can give you show absolution from that point of view. You will not be excommunicated for missing a few of the midweek drives, because, as you know, Phil, you can always catch up most of the things via podcasts as well. So there we are.
Yeah, but I don't think I get to hear Cameron's selection.
No, that's true. No, you can't. Yes, copyright reasons. There we are. Don't blame us. Blame the musicians' union, who insist on actually paying these musicians for. I mean, Ed, you know, please sort something out about this.
I'll do my best.
Anyway, let's just progress. Katie, any questions you want to put to Phil? Oh, sorry. Yeah, go on, Phil.
I had a question for you. I was just wondering, like, how much of the song are you allowed to? Are you allowed to use any of it?
Yeah, we can normally get 30 seconds ish, 30 seconds intro, 30 seconds outro. Those are the kind of ballpark things that we looked at. It's, if you think
a couple weeks ago on Chilpack Hollywood Hour, we remembered our friend Reg Presley, who
I know.
Died.
Yeah.
I think I included just under 30 seconds of Love Is All Around,
which is fine.
We had a wonderful clip of him telling Dean how he wrote that song, and so I should be fine with that.
You will be perfectly fine. We will endorse you in every sense of the word. There's no worries there whatsoever, because you can also cite as evidence, should you actually have the case taken to trial, you can cite as evidence that Commercial River website, which actually plays you snippets of music as well from that point of view before you actually sort of purchase them. So there we are, if you wish to purchase them or download
them. This was valuable advice and information for fledgling podcasters.
There we are.
Out there.
Yeah, it's all good. Anyway, Katie, any questions you want to put to Phil?
What music have you been listening to, or artists have you been listening to recently?
Do you know, Katie, this is not because she was on the Oscars. This was really kind of apropos of nothing. But for the last couple weeks, I've been listening to hundreds of songs, literally hundreds, from Dame Shirley Bassey, who, of course, most famous in this country for having sung Goldfinger and Diamonds Are Forever in the Bond themes. But I have been just immersed. I've been listening to live recordings from her. I mean, I first really became interested in her more than 10 years ago, when there was this great series of discs from Hotel Costas in Paris. A DJ there who would create great mixes between classic vocals and hip-hop rhythms. And often Shirley Bassey's 60s recordings would be used for these. But I'm now going back to the original song catalog, and it's fantastic. So
just enough time to squeeze in this, then?
You know how the wind, no matter how blustery, remains as silent as it is invisible until it meets with leaves and kites and flags and such? Well, it's exactly the same with the manifesting forces that make dreams come true until they meet with expectation. And right this second, they're whirling all around you, my little chiquita. Happy everything, the universe.
And it's likely that the Midweek Drive team will be going over to meet Mike Dooley in person when he's over in Manchester in April. That'll be Saturday, April the 20th. You can add that to our list of various other bits and pieces. Very exciting. He's in Tahiti now, or he's about to be heading off to Tahiti. That's what Mike Dooley actually does. Anyway, last two questions for Phil Leonis, please. Nicola.
Yes, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Phil?
I have, although I found the segue from me to Mike Dooley talking about a blustering wind to be somewhat unfortunate.
Oh, dear.
I took it personally. I really did. I took it personally.
Well, don't. And can we look forward to speaking with you next week?
Oh, this wind will be blustering through the final 25 minutes of next week's Midweek Drive.
We've got the deputy editor of SFX magazine on next week, Richard Edwards. We've got the return of Derek Hanley. We've got a whole heap of other fine things, including Nikki Wells. He'll be with us as well. Thanks to Martin Fish, Arthur Weingarten, Penny Roberts, Michelle Munro, Annette Andre, Cameron Tilbury, Phil Linus, and you, dear listener, and certainly Ed Wellman, Grace Parkin, Katie Grimerson, Nicola Clancy. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye.
What now, my love? That's the key question we ask. Here's Dame Shirley.
Watching my dreams turn into ashes and my hope.